the next decade, we may see young people who know just the right emoji for a situation, but not the right facial expression. This is one of the predictions made by Dr. Jean Twenge, who's Professor of Psychology at San Diego University. She makes it in her new book called iGen, which is an exploration of growing up with superconnectivity. Jean Twenge joins us via Skype from San Diego. Jean, first of all, just paint us a quick picture of how this superconnectivity via the smartphone is changing social dynamics between young people.
So iGen is those born between 1995 and about 2012. So they are the first generation to grow up on their whole adolescence with a smartphone. And that's had ripple effects across many areas of their lives. So one is they're spending a lot of time communicating with their friends through their phones using social media and texting and so on. So by according to most surveys, about 6 to 8 hours a day of their leisure time is spent on some type of screen device. And that doesn't leave much time left over for things like seeing your friends in person. So that was one of the first things that I noticed in these big national data sets of surveys of teens that are done here in the U.S. every year, is these big declines in how often teens said they just got together with their friends informally, or went to parties, or went to the shops, or rode around in a car for fun. All the things that teens do to get together face-to-face, iGen teens are doing less.
So does that mean their lives are more insular than compared to previous generations?
Well, you know, they're in contact with their friends almost constantly through their phones, but they are getting less of that face-to-face, in-person social interaction, which we know from lots of research is the best formula for mental health. It's the best way to develop social skills. It's just more emotionally meaningful and close to be with someone in person versus this electronic communication, which has become so much more common.
Tease out for me a bit more, you know, that if hanging out with your friends face-to-face has declined and been replaced by virtual contact, tell me more about it, in what ways that matters, or if it matters.
So I think it does matter for a couple of reasons. So first, in these big surveys, I started to notice around 2012 or so, which is the year, at least here in the U.S., when the percentage of Americans with a smartphone crossed 50%. Right at that same time, there were these big changes in teens spending time on the phone and less time with their friends in person. That same year was also when there was a sudden increase in teens starting to say that they felt useless, that they felt like they couldn't do anything right. And these are classic symptoms of depression. Some other big national screening studies started to show increases in clinical level depression, which has gone up by 50% between 2011 and 2015. There's also been a very large increase in the suicide rate among teens, particularly among young teen girls, those ages 12 to 14, where the suicide rate has tripled. So the first thing I noticed was these trends were happening at the same time. Teens were moving away from in-person social interaction and toward more time on their phones at the same time that these mental health issues were showing up. And then digging deeper, I found in these data sets, as many others have, that pattern of time use is correlated with less happiness and more depression, because spending time with people in person makes us happy and less depressed. Spending time on the screen does not. It, in fact, most of the time in most studies shows a link to less happiness and more depression.
I'll tell you what I've noticed, Jean, and this is across generations, I think. It's much harder to, these days, strike up conversations with strangers because, well, say before my exercise class, everyone's sitting outside waiting to go in. And instead of maybe just having a little chat, we're all on our smartphones checking Facebook and texting. So in a way, kind of turning our backs on each other. You know, whereas in the past, that would have been how I might have made new friends, or at least just been friendly with people. Not so much anymore. Again, does that matter?
You know, I think it does. I mean, that's the other thing that's so fascinating about the way the smartphone has changed our lives. These chefs that I've been able to identify in these surveys may actually be even more pronounced than what they show, because they ask about teens, say, getting together and hanging out with their friends, which they do less, but they don't capture this fact, which is exactly as you said. Even when we're with other people in person, face to face, so often we're still on our phones. And I say we because that includes adults as well as teens.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith with Jean Twenge in San Diego. She's the author of iGen, about today's super connected kids. Now, also joining us from Hobart is Nina Kemp. Nina's a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Tasmania, and she's been mapping the way that language and communication is changing in the age of texting. Nina, how has texting changed the way we are using language?
For a very long time, the way that English was written hasn't changed at all for centuries, only with very small changes. But in the last 10 or 20 years, I think that's when we've seen changes in the way people are willing to write English and other languages as well. With the rise of text messaging, and then later, or at the same time with other online media, people have become more comfortable changing the way that words are written. And it started off with people trying to save time and save effort when they had a small screen and a limited keypad and had to press each key a number of times to get the letter that they wanted. So initially people were really trying to cram as many words as they could in a small space. So the trend was really for abbreviations, leaving out vowels, for example, so message might be spelled MSG.
Do you see that as creative use of language or a negative way to be with language?
My initial view was the one that was kind of trumpeted in the popular press, the problem. You know, this is ruining language. Children are going to become unable to read and write anymore. They'll forget how to spell. And in fact, it was quite creative. And there's overwhelming literature now suggesting that children who were better at writing these textisms, as we've called them, so like examples of abbreviations via text message and other media, children who did more of those and understood them more were actually the children who were better at language, not the children who were worse at written and spoken language.
Now, you've also studied the use of text messaging across generations. What have you found out about the way older generations communicate compared to younger?
Initially, younger people were those who took up these abbreviated and creative spellings. But over the years, this has become less cool. It's kind of only used ironically now, as university undergraduates tell me. And in fact, they say that the people who use the most abbreviations are in fact their parents' generation, who come onto it perhaps a bit later and have stuck with those abbreviations that younger people are now no longer using.
Well, let me put the call out to you. Has the smartphone changed the way you communicate? Have you noticed changes in the way you or your family members interact socially since you've had smartphones? And any concerns? You can post a comment on the Life Matters Facebook page. Nina Kemp, how has the smartphone changed texting?
Because more modern phones, smartphones have a lot more ability to predict what words you want to write, there's a lot less of this creative respelling and abbreviation because there's more space, the keyboard is bigger, people are paying less per message, and for the people's point of view, it's become less cool to use these abbreviations. But what people are doing now, they're continuing to spell things unusually, just not in the same way. So in fact, the trend is to increase the number of letters or characters you use. So especially to introduce expression or emotion into messages. So people might use a lot of letter E's to write, please, will you come? They might write a lot more exclamation marks and question marks than would be used in standard written language, and they'll add in emoticons or emojis as well.
So this idea that young people won't be able to string sentences together anymore because of the advent of texting, from your research, is unfounded.
It has been up until now, but I want to be a bit careful about that, because until now the research has been based on children who were thinking of creative ways to re-spell words. So if you spell great, G-R-8, and then think, oh, I could spell weight, W-8, you're really thinking about the sound structure of words, which is related to greater ability with reading and writing. But as some of the changes become perhaps seen as more lazy, so for example, there's also a lot of omission of punctuation, especially apostrophes, capitals and so forth, perhaps the children who are texting now, the relationships might be different. So until now, it's been associated with better reading and writing, but we need ongoing research to check that that remains the case.
Is there, though, any new kind of anxiety that's presenting among young people, those who might already be struggling with communication? Do they feel there's a kind of right way to text, a right kind of language to use?
Yes, even though there are no written rules, I think within social groups, especially of young people, there are unwritten rules about how you write a certain word or how you might express something. And I think for young people who are already struggling with reading and writing in the school classroom context, it's not as though anything goes once you're texting and you're no longer at a disadvantage because you can just write whatever you like. Actually, it's more difficult. You not only have to learn to spell in the standard manner, you have to learn how to spell in this other way as well that will fit digital interaction. And also you have to be able to decipher what your friends write, and that might not always be very easy for you. So kids who are already struggling with reading and writing might actually find this is an extra burden rather than a way they can get away with not spelling correctly.
Mm. Jean Twenge in San Diego, as you've been talking about, you're concerned that young people are at risk of losing the art of communicating face-to-face. One young person you spoke to for your research said, sometimes it makes us like aliens. We don't know how to talk to people anymore. So, you know, they may be really good at this sort of creative use of the online form of communication, but what are the social ramifications for them?
Yeah, so I've already talked about some of the possible mental health repercussions, but that's the other big question, which we really don't have a clear answer for right now, is whether this generation will also have a hard time with face-to-face social skills. There's one study that suggests that that might end up being the case. It was a study with 11-year-olds, and half of them went to a camp with no screens for 5 days, and the others continued with their normal screen-filled lives. And at the end of the 5 days, those who were at the no-screen camp improved more in reading the emotional expressions on other people's faces. Now, I want to make clear that's one study, that we don't have great data over time on social skills, so there's a lot still to be done. It does make some sense that social skills take practice, just like playing the piano or writing, any kind of skill, you really need practice. So I think it makes some sense that if teens are not practicing their face-to-face social skills as much, then they may have trouble in that area, but we don't know for sure yet.
Well, you also show that texting and apps on smartphones have created a new art of communicating. And some examples you give, I think, tagging or not tagging someone on Instagram. Now, that has a kind of implicit message attached to it.
Yeah. So, in addition to the millions of teens and young adults who filled out those surveys, I also did some in-depth interviews with teens. And one of them mentioned that there's this new form of social communication on Instagram in terms of, if you don't tag someone in a photo, what she said is, that means that they're mad at you.
Right. Okay. What about the amount of time spent replying to a text or not replying to a text?
So I think that, might be at least a small part of some of the anxiety that this generation is feeling. That, I mean, if you want your text to be answered instantly, send it to a 13-year-old, because instant response is kind of the standard, because they've got their phones, you know, in their hands all the time. And if you don't write back right away, then your friend is wondering what's wrong. And are you mad at me? Is that why you're not writing back right away?
So yes, because you can't possibly have not seen that message, because, as you say, the phone is there and being looked at all the time.
Right. And of course, you know, there could be other reasons for it. And that's why it's so anxiety provoking, because unlike face-to-face communication, where you can see the other person's expression and hear what they have to say right away, with a text, sometimes you have to wait. And teens have tried to do away with that by replying to everything right away. But that's a difficult way to live, to have that phone in your hand all the time. And it doesn't seem to be the best for mental health. You know, using that phone up to 2 hours a day doesn't seem to have mental health effects. But it's beyond that. It's the 3, 4, 5, 6, even, you know, 10 hours a day during leisure time that some teens are spending on their phone. And some of that is because texting and social media pulls for that instant response, and they feel like they have to give it.
Jean, does any concern, though, in this area kind of need to be tempered with, you know, an acknowledgement that every generation has a different way of doing things and a different way of expressing themselves?
Yeah, and sure, every generation does have their way of communicating, but I'm not sure that's particularly relevant for our discussion here, because it's teens themselves who are telling us that they feel depressed, that they feel anxious, and we need to listen to that. We're comparing that to what teens said in previous generations, so you can look at it this way, that, you know, boomers and Gen Xers and millennials had their own ways of communicating, but they tended to not have this huge spike in mental health issues that came about right when that form of communication came on the scene. So there were obviously, you know, mental health issues in other generations as well. Some of them may have been due to changes in social life and communication that way. But our concern right now is with this generation of teens and why they're telling us that they are feeling more depressed and anxious.
Well, as we've been exploring for a while now here in Life Matters in various ways, it really is fascinating to consider how the smartphone is changing us and the way we communicate with each other. Jean Twenge is the author of iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood, joining us from San Diego. Great to talk to you, Jean. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Nina Kemp is a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Tasmania in Hobart. Thanks to you too, Nina, for joining us in Life Matters.
Thank you.
And hey, what do you think the smartphone is doing to the fine art of communicating? Have you noticed your language changing at all under the effect of texting and apps? Let's know on Facebook